A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to our good community-minded friends at Horicon Bank. Today's show, we're talking community energy, real-time community energy. Heartland is taking another swing at a boutique hotel. Brian Williams is popping back into our lives on Netflix. Ooh, Greg Marshall is popping out of the trees. Maybe a little talk about Gen Z and why they're trading bar tabs for barbells. And we're going to get into this a little bit. Actually, I'm not sure if that's the best term, but we're going to talk about toilets and EVs. It's a thing. It's a brand new patent in China. It's a pretty interesting story. And if I have time, I got another really interesting local and national story that's happening at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. I'm Jeff Sherman. This is The Upswing. You know how we begin each and every show. We go to up.
Now it's time for the two up on the upswing.
Two up. These are just two things in the business world, the community world, maybe in your neighborhood that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. First up, Heartland may finally be getting the kind of boutique hotel that really matches the Lake Country charm. And it's coming from a team behind the Commodore in Delafield that's on Lake Nagawicca. Heartland, if you didn't know, it's about 10,000 residents just west of Milwaukee. Here's the story. Hospitality investors and philanthropists Jay Frankie and David Hero are proposing a four-story, 17,000-square-foot boutique hotel on Capitol Drive in Cottonwood. It's going to replace a gas station that's been closed for a while. I think it used to be a boutique way back in the day, right in downtown Heartland. Plan calls for 30 or 40 boutique curated rooms with a nod to Lake Country's history. We're going to have a rooftop conservatory that's going to be open for the pub to the public for drinks and light bites, all positioned for the leisure traveler, golfers, and all the wedding parties. There's a lot of weddings out in Lake Country. I think it's a really good idea. Even village leaders are saying, all right, you got our very early unanimous support. One of the village trustees saying that this project could be, quote, the spark that gets Heartland going where it needs to be. The construction hopes to begin by the end of the year, and an opening is targeted for 2028. Second up, I'm going to go national for this one. I think it's really interesting. I've always said that Netflix should explore news a little bit. You know, get that other hook. Get out of the shows and movies. They've dipped their toe into podcasts, and now they're going to kind of blend podcasts and news. Here's the story. Former NBC Nightly News anchor and MSNBC, back when it was called MSNBC, Brian Williams is returning to TV screens. He was a mainstay at NBC for 28 years. Now he's 66, and he's bringing a brand new podcast to Netflix where, quote, viewers will see a side of him that he's never seen, that has never been seen before. He's going to do unscripted, unhurried, and utterly himself conversations. The podcast is going to be titled We're Back with Brian Williams, former news anchor, talking with actors, writers, musicians, athletes, journalists. Maybe a little bit of a signal that Netflix is ready to move into a bit more newsy lane. It will be interesting to see how this goes over. Podcasts already doing a strong showing on Netflix, but now adding a former news anchor, they're going to go strongly into the news lane. When we come back, a couple stories around community and worship, and what Gen Z is doing and not doing at the bar. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Community through worship. Show is all about building community. Here's a story. More young men are showing up again at least once a month in houses of worship. Gallup says, according to its polling, that monthly or more attendance among men 18 years to 29 years old has climbed up to 40% now. This is up more than 7% since 2022, and the highest it's been since 2012. And it's not just about showing up. Like 42% now of young men say religion is very important in their lives. And that's up from 28% in the last survey. And this idea, it hits home, right? It hits home for all of us, I think. I grew up Catholic. My mom's from a big Italian family in Kenosha. My godmother's a nun, school sisters of St. Francis. You know, faith for me was always around. We weren't forced to go to Mass or forced to go to church, but I did the whole path, right? I did CCD, I did First Communion, I did Confirmation. Then, oddly, I got to Marquette, and I kind of drifted away from it. I'm like, I'm at Marquette. Kind of ironic. I'm not going to tell Dr. Chemo the next time he's here, but like, Marquette was filled with opportunities for faith. Like, you had places of worship, you had all these wonderful spaces for reflection, but I didn't really lean into it until my senior year at Marquette. But looking back, you know, hey, the timing kind of seems right, because faith, like community, I think, doesn't always show up on schedule. Sometimes it finds you when you're ready for it. And maybe that's kind of what we're seeing with all this new polling data now, especially among young men. They're returning to worship because, I don't know, religion isn't an obligation. It's kind of more about a generation sensing like, wow, we need community. And we need to ask something of ourselves that isn't only about ourselves. And they're seeking something that is bigger and to be a part of a greater good. So don't let all the recent spats with the Pope and the President jade you. Like, community in places of worship, it really works. And truly, no matter what you think, never doubt the power of like a small group of people within any house of worship being committed to a cause, and the fact that that can really, truly change the world. Speaking of change, 20-somethings, I'm talking a lot about 20-somethings today, they're drinking less, they're exercising more, and they're changing the way they're socializing with one another. Last Friday at the Wisconsin Club right here in downtown Milwaukee, I went to a panel discussion. It was on the future of craft beverages. It was really interesting. It was presented by the IABW, the Independent Business Association of Wisconsin. Two panelists on the stage. One was Mary Pelletieri. Mary is one of the co-founders of Top Note Tonic. And then Kevin Wright from Third Space Brewing Company. It was a really good discussion about the challenges and all the opportunities, too, within the beverage space in Wisconsin. Mary, she used to work at Miller at Molson Coors years ago before she started Top Note Tonic in 2017. And her brand, interesting, is kind of alcohol adjacent, right? They pair really well all of her tonics with alcohol, but the products can be consumed without alcohol too. Tonics, ginger beers, other mixers. And she talked a lot about the changing habits of drinkers and had a really interesting take about how far beer has fallen. She said about 10 years ago at Miller, they were doing 9 million barrels of beer. Now they're down to about 3 million. And if you look at shipping data across the country for barrels of beer, dropped below 200 million barrels of beer for the first time since 1999. So 2025 data is also indicating that volume pressure is real, especially in craft and some mainstream brands. Ongoing decline and a little bit of shakeout. And even Kevin Right from Third Space Brewing was saying this. Like, he is a passionate, wonderful beer guy, right? He's saying he's seeing the changing habits. Their hop waters are selling really well at Third Space. THC drinks are selling really well, and other NA products. He also admitted what he's seen at the grocery store. And Third Space Brewing Company is in every county in the state of Wisconsin except for one, But he noted he's seeing lower sales volume, especially at the registers at the local grocery stores. And he also noted that it's wine as well. So it really tracks well with the younger generation. Younger adults just traditionally used to go out and meet coworkers at the bar. Now, I saw this at the Wall Street Journal last week, they're socializing around fitness, not booze. Rebecca Palmer is certified financial planner and head of financial guidance at Fruitful. She says her clients in their 20s and 30s view fitness and wellness spending as an essential expense, not discretionary. Wellness is one of the last things that they will cut from their budgets. We're seeing this in the younger generation. They're not spending as much money on alcohol. They're spending more money on health and wellness. So you're giving priority to wellness earlier in life. It's going to be better for wealth and health later in life. I got another thing that's going to be better for your health. Well, yeah, I think it will be. I got a really interesting story out of China about a patent and an EV and a toilet. That's coming up next. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Kohler Company, why didn't you think of this? Whoa, let me tell you this story from China. Chinese EV maker Seres, it's actually spelled S-E-R-E-S, wants to make long road trips more convenient with a commode that slides out on command. Yes, that's right. No more pulling over to Quick Trip to go to the bathroom for you. Seres, which is a real prominent EV maker out of China, just secured a patent for an in-car toilet that slides out and tucks away beneath your seat. The patent, which was first reported in Autoblog, it was filed in April of 2025, but it was approved just this week, and it's currently active. So it's pretty interesting. The patented design looks practical enough. It has this rail system that allows a compact toilet to slide out from under the seat like a drawer and remain hidden from view when not in use. According to the patent filing, it's intended to, quote, satisfy users' toilet needs on long journeys while camping or while staying in the car. Interesting. The design also includes a fan, an exhaust system, a high-tech tank with a heating element, probably to dry out the waste, and the system can be activated through a button or voice command. Siri, take the wheel, slide out my toilet, I guess is what they're looking for. Now, obviously, companies patent things all the time. And sometimes they don't have any intention upon sending them directly to the production line and marketing them. But I think this could have a space, right? I mean, obviously, there are toilets on Greyhounds or on the Badger bus or whatever it may be. But it's not impossible to imagine that people might want to consider this type of option in a normal car. Public bathrooms can be hard to come by if you're on a long trip. I don't know. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on this. I'm sure it's going to be a while before this hits stateside, but Seres has the ability to do this. It is a high-end luxury vehicle manufacturer, and it sold more cars in China last year than BMW and Mercedes. Very interesting. Keep an eye on it for sure. Next up, American Idol coming to Children's Hospital in Wisconsin. So next month in May, I have a show scheduled with the CEO of Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, Gil Perry. He's going to be joining us here on The Upswing, and I'm sure he's going to have a lot to say about this, but I wanted to mention it beforehand because it's a really cool, important story that blends local and national. American Idol, the host, Ryan Seacrest, is opening a media studio at Children's Wisconsin, and this is just super intentional, right? It's bound to have great impact. I mean, you see and hear about stories all the time where a professional athlete or a celebrity comes through a hospital, says hi to kids. That's wonderful. It's amazing. But this, creating a studio in the lobby at Children's Hospital is really a way to empower kids and patients and give them the ability to create while they're in the hospital. So the whole mantra of this partnership is about creation and connection. It's super cool. Ryan Seacrest is partnering with Children's. High-tech build-out. It's like 1,200 square feet. It's going to be a glass studio in the hospital's main lobby that's going to let young patients create their own shows, their own podcasts, their own video content. It's going to start in 2028. It's funny. I was telling our son about this, and I'm like, Jake, you know who Ryan Seacrest is? And he's like, yeah, he's that guy that like drops the ball and has no wrinkles on his forehead, right? I'm like, yeah, that's Ryan Seacrest. Of course, he's way more than that. Like, Ryan Seacrest is a true national media brand in and of himself, and his foundation is doing this with Children's Hospital, which is even more important. Programming is going to include music and interviews and games and interactive shows that are all broadcast throughout the hospital. So even kids that can't leave their rooms are going to be able to see this programming. Super cool. Creation all the way. It's also going to create volunteer and internship opportunities for local media students. So it's going to tie into Milwaukee's broader creative and tech ecosystem, recruitment and retention. We talk about that all the time here on The Upswing. I love this idea, a true national media brand meeting a local pediatric care brand to build a platform where kids, right? Kids in the hospital can be creators, not just patients. They can use storytelling, that Greg Marshall's going to talk about in a minute, podcasting, and live shows as tools for healing, tools for confidence, and of course, community building right here at our Children's Hospital in Milwaukee. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As promised, in studio, the one and only Greg Marshall. Greg, thanks for taking time out of your day to spend a little bit of it with us.
I love that we get to hang out today.
Oh, yes. Exciting. So Greg is chief storyteller and producer at CI Design, a hip-hop artist, therapist, author, Emmy Award-winning producer, brand strategist, advertising executive, and much, much more. Greg, I want to just first have you define this term storyteller that everyone is using now. I mean, I saw a Wall Street Journal headline just like a couple weeks ago. Headline was, companies are desperately seeking storytellers. Everyone says, we're doing storytelling. But how do you describe what a storyteller does within an organization?
Yeah, how I would say that's probably different from maybe a classic understanding of it, which I'm excited about, because back in the day, people would say, how do we get our message out there? Mm-hmm. And now it's more about how do we actually matter to people? Mm-hmm. And with the explosion of AI, which means an explosion of mediocre work and, at best in many ways, infinite mediocre work, having people with really good taste about what actually connects, but not just connects with an audience, like what actually represents a company. So for being a storyteller to me is more about facilitating the discovery of what story they're actually in together and then bringing that to life, not just with talking about it, but how the organization actually embodies it. That's really storytelling.
I mean, you mentioned AI, of course, but you've worked with hundreds of organizations and brands through the years. Like, does it feel different now than it did 10 years ago when you go into that first client meeting or that first client Zoom? Like, what's that big point of difference? It's not just technology, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting moment because everybody's different. Some people haven't even discovered AI quite yet as an organization, and others believe that it's their savior. And you kind of get a different vibe in every conversation. But yeah, I think what's different is people are confused, more confused as to what they should actually be doing or could be doing. There's a lot of hope around, like, look at all the money we can save. But it's not actually producing greater outcomes and behaviors necessarily. Even mm-hmm. It kind of just impresses the person that's using it.
Yeah.
And so it depends on where people are at in their discovery journey with a tool like AI that can be really great, or if you know, in that journey, or if they haven't begun it yet. But yeah, it's kind of all over the place. Yeah.
So when you see or hear storytelling done really well within marketing or advertising, what are those ingredients then that you hear and see over and over?
Yeah, it's a really good question. One of the ingredients is it's a very specific point of view that somebody can actually disagree with is really important. I use metaphor to help people figure out the picture behind what they're really trying to say. And organizations consistently resist clarity. They say they want it. They say they want alignment and clarity, but they resist it because to find it, you have to actually have a perspective, and it's got to be concrete. And so it's scary to people. So specific point of view, I would say second is a very specific audience. If you try to talk to everybody, it's just not, you're not really doing anything.
Yeah.
So knowing who you're actually communicating to and believing in that.
You're not just talking to yourself and your teammates. You got to find that niche audience and go hard there first before you can scale the message up.
Totally. Yeah. And then I would say the third ingredient is the language points to reality. Like it's a story that's actually coming out of what's true of an organization and not just language that the audience wants to hear according to whatever surveys and interviews that were done.
Yeah.
It has to be rooted in who you really are. If I had to choose between finding out what the audience wants to hear versus what the company truly is and what its soul is, I'll every day pick the soul and what the company is really trying to accomplish, and then we can translate it to the audience.
But yeah. Getting to that heart of the why is so important with marketing and advertising. I mean, you talk a lot about rhythm and kind of flow state. It's like who you are as a musician, as a producer. But what does that actually look and feel like in advertising today? And when you incorporate like rhythm and flow into a brand story, how do you do that?
Yeah, I compare branding to developing greater emotional intelligence as a person. And in order to do that, so it's kind of an analogy, but it's also literal. But as a person, if you want to build emotional intelligence, you become more aware of somebody else and you become more aware of yourself. And then you behave, speak, connect in a way that acknowledges that awareness. Mm-hmm. And so rhythm is really conversation. But it's not just the dialogue back and forth. It's us as an organization understanding what it's like to be on the other side of the table from us and actually doing the work of embodying the stuff that we say we're about.
Yeah.
So that rhythm is like, it's both conversation and are these words pointing to something real? And there's always that give and take of like, we're not quite there, but we want to be this. Well, we're moving towards it. And then conversation is like, we're not just always nailing it. Sometimes we got to stop and say, we didn't get that right.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and rhythm can often work into awareness. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the Boston Marathon this past week. I don't know if you saw what Nike did, but they landed in a little bit of hot water with a big outdoor billboard in Boston, right ahead of the Boston Marathon. The sign simply said, runners welcome, walkers tolerated. It drew a lot of backlash, especially on social. Some said it was elitist. Some said it wasn't inclusive of all the abilities, of all the paces. And Nike ended up removing it. What are your thoughts when you see a strategy in kind of words that are maybe set there for a reason? But what are your thoughts from a brand expert lens?
Yeah, it's super unfortunate because that context is everything. And so when that was created, somebody created a nice piece of copy, a nice ad that works with the core audience that they were thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that sign had been in a running specialty store where everybody that comes in is a runner, it has a tongue-in-cheek, you know, sort of humor to it. It could connect. It could be great. But when you put it on a sign where everybody can see it, that's going to create problems because they wrote it for their core audience, not for the context in which it would be experienced.
Yeah, so if you are talking to leadership and that creative team right after that went live, is that what you're advising? Like, wow, you didn't really analyze the bigger market right away. You went directly that way instead of going niche?
Yeah, I would just want to, if you wanted to understand how we got there, I would ask, you know, walk me through how you, who you were picturing when you wrote that. and then try to help connect the dots. Now imagine who's actually standing there watching. And like, you don't know if it's somebody's got a brother who lost their leg in a war, mm-hmm. and they're walking for the first time this distance. You know, you don't know. So there's that. But then there's also, you don't shame. It's not about shaming somebody who had the blind spot. The whole organization had a blind spot. So it's really, as a leader, I would want to ask, like, what do we want to be true about Nike in Boston in 48 hours? Like, how do we want to relate to this city right now as us?
Yeah, because, I mean, you want to have that identity. You want to have that edge, too, right? I mean, it's just do it. That's what Nike says on everything. Does that boldness work? And should they have kept this campaign up?
Yeah, I think just do it is bold and inclusive at the same time. And I think that's always – that's possible. And I think you could think of it like – there's your core audience, and then there's your adjacent audience that you hope would come in that's next to that person, and then you have your skeptics. And if you're going to do something as big as the Boston Marathon, you're going to want to at least consider, does this alienate the adjacent person? Does it nail our core audience? Does it alienate the adjacent person that we want in? And then finally, if give this message to a skeptic, does it feed into the thing that they're most likely to point out? And in that context, that kind of depth is important.
You're listening to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Greg Marshall, when we come back, we're going to dive into your show, Greg Marshall Pops Out of the Trees. That's coming up right after the break. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Greg Marshall Pops Out of the Trees, hits the stage at the Vivarium with the Pabst Theater Group. Storytelling, music, improv, one performance May 7th. It's dedicated to Stella's Playground. We're going to talk a little bit about that later. Greg, your show, simply called Greg Marshall, Pops Out of the Trees. You got to give me the origin story of the show.
Well, I created a podcast to share stories that I wanted my kids, my daughters, to be able to have reference to as they got older, and started playing with the idea of performing the stories. And so I went to some story slams. And the first one I went to, I went in not intending to do anything, but I put my name in the hat just because, well, let's see. And I ended up winning that night. And so I ended up performing at these finals, storytelling competition, and I shared another story that did really well. And then I started looking at how these stories were connected, and I was like, man, I just want to create. I help a lot of other people bring to life their stories and help them to reach their goals with creativity and storytelling and production. And I wanted to see what it was like to be my own client, mm-hmm. to get on stage. I used to perform a lot when I was younger, and I wanted to try it again in a different way. And so this is a manifestation of all the things I love, from storytelling to music, comedy, drama. And it's sort of a culmination of, I think, you know, my best abilities.
Yeah, even some freestyling, which is super impressive. How does that experience being on stage feel different than kind of leading the room in front of CEOs and creators? I mean, I've been in those rooms with you. It's amazing, the juices flow. But when you're on stage, like, are you nervous? Like, what's that feeling?
I don't know why, but when I'm on stage, I'm actually more relaxed than I am. Not at first, but after a couple of minutes, I feel way more relaxed than I am in a business context even. I don't know why. I think I'm just in a story that's true of my life, and I enjoy being in that story in a way that I know is going to make other people's lives better. Mm-hmm. And so, and the satisfaction of both, though, is very similar. Like, if I facilitate a process with a group of leaders that goes well, and I derive just as much satisfaction from that as I do from performing.
Yeah.
But it's just a different experience for me.
So that through line that ties it all together is you're being authentically you, and you're hoping at what you're delivering on stage helps others, or at least people react in a different way and come up to you afterwards and say, hey, can I ask you a question about that? Like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it is cool. They're both a product, and both products help people walk away feeling better about what they're doing and who they are and more alert. Their imagination has been opened up a little bit, and that always feels awesome.
We're talking with Greg Marshall. Greg, earlier in the last segment, we talked about Nike and kind of how they accidentally excluded people with a few words on a sign. Your May performance is dedicated to Stella's Playground, a movement that was built to create Milwaukee's first universally accessible and inclusive playground. How'd you decide to connect with that cause?
Well, my show really hits on this question of who gets to be heard and what stories actually matter. And it's me telling my story, but really about the audience's story so that people remember where they come from and that their story is interesting. So when you think about a playground, that's a very literal version of that question for a kid, like who gets to play, who gets to be invited in. And I think that the way that it relates to the show is really beautiful. But Stella is the daughter of a friend of mine, Reese Schneider, and it's also and Stella dealt with a very serious illness, and you know, it's been a really hard journey for them. And when I see the hope and resilience and fortitude and their willingness to use their suffering and struggle to birth something that creates hope and invites people in, mm-hmm. all of that together to me is I just want to help other people feel connected to that story as they feel connected to the one I'm sharing.
Building that connective tissue, that's so important. So the fans of this show, I mean, we got leaders, entrepreneurs, creatives, just community builders as a whole. What's a question that you'd love to ask people specifically about somebody else's story? I think we all love to talk about ourselves, but how do you get people to open up whether you're on stage or whether you're in the boardroom?
I think it comes from real sincerity. Like the finding the question comes from stirring up sincere curiosity about another person. And so you have to look at the person and wonder about their life and observe something about them and choose to be curious, which you have to kind of cast off all of the self-focus that we have and distraction and focus ourselves on paying attention to the human across from us, and hopefully whatever question naturally comes is the right one. But I have two that I love. One is, what's it like to be you today?
Ooh, I like that.
And I have watched people drop their shoulders.
Yeah.
I've seen people get tears in their eyes. I've had people tell me months later that was a turning point in their month or year because somebody wanted to know what it was like to be them. So that's a question I sincerely ask. And then another might be, you know, what's the part of your story that you don't usually tell or get to tell? What's the part of your story that you don't get to tell people? And that's nice too, because people have treasures in them and they don't get to share them very often.
Those are great. I love it. We're talking with Greg Marshall. Greg, what's a smaller local story that you just have a ton of passion for that you don't think gets enough attention?
I was in a conversation this morning with an organization called Beat Childhood Cancer, and they are in a couple different cities, but their executive director here is in Milwaukee, and they are doing amazing stuff for children that are told that there's no hope. And there's stories like theirs that, I want to do everything I can to help people understand it. But there's a lot of those.
What's an example? That's great. I love it. What's an example of a company or an organization that you're working with that is getting authenticity right? That's just like, wow, this is who you are. You are doing it perfectly from an ad perspective.
I don't know if anybody's doing it perfectly. But yeah, there's a local business, PS Seasoning and Pro Smoker, that I'm working with that we're going through a process right now of identifying what is that most authentic manifestation of their story. And I think why they come to mind is because they're not just trying to figure out what the audience wants to hear, they in many ways are the audience and embody the things that their core audience loves. Mm. And so it's a really fun process of observing the DNA, sequencing the DNA of a place, and then creating very authentic experiences with it that translate to very specific audiences, like, you know, barbecue enthusiasts or meat crafters who do this stuff at home like they're a professional, you know, but they're making these things as a hobby, as a hunter, or, you know, they love showing off in their backyard what they're smoking, you know. I love what's happening over there with the people and the way that the messaging is coming to life.
I like it. I saw earlier this week, Greg, that you were out at the Third Street Market Hall doing some impromptu raps, maybe a little creative promotion for the show.
Yeah.
Can I give you like 6 words and you just come up with a rap, and then we'll wrap up your segment. I want to have you tell us where we can get tickets to your show, of course.
Yeah, you got to be careful, though, because 6 words, I could go for like 6 minutes.
All right.
So I'll try to keep it short.
Let's keep
I'll try
it
to
like it 45 seconds.
Yeah,
all right.
I'll do my best.
Greg Marshall, let's go. How about creativity, community, connections, pause, focus, and upswing? Greg Marshall, you're on the mic.
Creativity, community, connections, pause, focus, upswing. All right, here's a little freestyle. Freestyle poetry, freestyle rapping. Inside of me is a whole lot of creativity that comes alive when I'm in community, connecting with others, sisters and brothers, other humans that are trying to make stuff on Earth. That's where the best ideas are given birth. When we're together, disagreeing or agreeing on whatever, that helps us to move on like the stormy weather. And at times, we know that we gotta pause to try to understand the cause and effect of where we're at. So we genuflect outside of the doorway that tells us where to go and find meaning. I'm trying to connect with this and keep it clean. And I'm looking for a way to focus, not hocus pocus. It's not magic. It's a way to look through the lens and turn it a little bit to make it clear. Focal point right here. Everybody look. And so we steer up, upward, and we bring a little bit of freestyle for upswing.
All right, Greg Marshall. Greg Marshall pops out of the trees at the Vivarium. Remind us on the date and where to get tickets.
May 7th, right. Thursday night. Doors open at 7, shows at 8. You can buy tickets online at the Pabst Theater Group website. Just search Vivarium or Greg Marshall pops out of the trees. Love to see you there.
We'll see you at the show. Always appreciate your time.
Thank you, man.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Finally, I want you to be thankful for events in our community like Milwaukee Film. As we wrap up here, I want to just say a really big thank you to everyone who makes the Milwaukee Film Festival happen each and every year. Their staff, their volunteers, their sponsors, their filmmakers, all the folks, of course, that buy tickets and sit in the seats. The festival's back this month, filling the Oriental Theater and the Downer Theater with nearly 250 films, conversations, and all those like hallway moments, which I think this is the biggest, coolest driver of the film festival. There's so many films there that you can't see anywhere else. So they spark creative conversations and connections. Like you can talk to a stranger about a movie that neither one of you can go home and watch on Netflix. That is super cool. So in this world of, I don't know, everything is kind of steering us into smaller and smaller screens, right? We're all watching movies on our phones. The 18th annual Milwaukee Film Festival is build in this different kind of algorithm for us. It is one based on curiosity, eye contact when you're buying your ticket, staying through the credits, sitting in the beautiful theaters. Oh, and for me, it's always putting that amazing brewer's yeast on the popcorn at the Oriental or the Downer. It is so good. I've actually bought some brewer's yeast and I put it on my popcorn at home. Insider tip there. So let's be thankful that in a city our size, we have a film festival that is so vibrant, that takes a full year to curate. Support it if you can. Maybe challenge yourself to see a film that you wouldn't normally pick. Like, get out of your comfort zone. That's where some of the best stories start. And that's exactly what Greg Marshall was talking about. right? You don't look outside the box. You look into other creative boxes to find stuff that's really, truly creative. MKEfilm.org is a site. Film Festival, the Milwaukee Film Festival, runs through April 30th.